What is up, Sixers fans? Welcome to the Sixers Talk Podcast. So glad you could join us once again. Danny Pommels, Noah Levick, Ben Berry, our esteemed producer, waiting in the wings on this one. And I mean, I guess in a way, it's the gift that keeps on giving because it gives us great discussion points. But here we are in the thick of the summer with the Olympics on the precipice of going down. Team USA struggling a bit in the exhibition games. Noah, just before we move into these other topics with Ben Simmons and some potential draft picks the Sixers could acquire, how surprised are you by the way Team USA has shown themselves in these exhibition games? Because we saw them play Team Australia and a lot of lockdown defense from Matisse Thybulle a couple of times on Kevin Durant, where he got the best of him. Has it surprised you how Team USA has adjusted to the FIBA game?
Yeah, I didn't think they'd start 0-2. I did think that defensively they've got some real weaknesses that other teams could exploit, especially a team like Australia that's got a really strong core that's been playing together for a while and has some good NBA players on that group. But yeah, starting 0-2, I most definitely did not envision. It was entertaining, I'm sure, for a lot of Sixers fans watching Matisse Thybulle in that game. Had a very impressive block as well on Damian Lillard. He's been shooting the three ball well.
Transition has been crazy.
Yeah, he's just gelled immediately with that squad. For those who don't know the backstory, he did live in Australia as a kid. I believe it was from around 2 to 8 or 9 years old. So that's the connection. And it's cool to see him thriving there. But the Americans, they're not going to coast to a gold medal. It's going to be a real challenge. I don't expect them to be losing multiple games in the pool play or anything like that, but they have some issues that they've got to figure out.
It's just amazing that they've played these exhibition games since 1992, they've won 55 of these exhibition games and lost just a handful. And we had to witness two of those losses in the last like 3 or 4 days. So this is really a surreal moment. You know, some people not appreciating the perspective on that, but to me, that is not lost because, the world is caught up and you see like the players that depending on the referees for some calls that they're not getting. This is the time that they need to gel and try to come together and go through the fire a bit. And hopefully they learn something, like you said, Noah. But hey, if I know you're watching it, Noah, if you haven't been paying attention to Matisse Thybulle's vlog on just the whole Olympic experience and how he loves to be barefoot, like it's just a cool watch his YouTube channel as he documents his Olympic experience. So once again, win, lose, or draw with what Team USA does, Matisse Thybulle continuing to show that he is just a grade A teammate, just really a pleasure to have in the Sixers fold. I think the weird thing about it, though, is that even though he's really well-liked around these parts and seems to be taking some strides in his personal game, maybe he could be included in a Ben Simmons trade as a potential incentive to bring back more of a return. It's weird because we'll get into the draft a bit later, but Matisse turns out to be a great diamond in the rough. Tyrese Maxey, a diamond in the rough. Maybe the Sixers can find something at 28 that fits that mold as well. But with the reports about Ben Simmons, Sham Charania with the report, Mark Stein with the report, Charania saying that, am I pronouncing that right? Is it Sham Charania? Do you know how to pronounce his last name?
Charania, yep.
Okay. Charania's report, not really surprising. He's saying that the Sixers have a high threshold. They want an all-star caliber player in return. And I mean, that's to be expected. Did that surprise you at all before we get into Mark Stein's individual teams, Noah?
No, nothing that's played out so far this offseason with Simmons has been shocking. As we've talked about before, Daryl Morey is always going to explore what's out there. And especially in light of what went down with Ben Simmons this postseason, it makes sense that they're talking about trading him. I mean, it is significant, though, that this is out there, that they are having real trade discussions about dealing away their number two star and number one draft pick. And it's a big deal, but is it shocking? No, I wouldn't say so.
Yeah, it's weird because be sure to check out both of Noah's articles on the potential draft picks the Sixers could land, as well as all these kerfuffles surrounding Ben Simmons here in the offseason on NBCSportsPhiladelphia.com. He's our excellent Sixers beat writer. And, you know, it's funny to me because you wouldn't think, you know, Simmons is even being affected by this. Like, he turns down the Olympics, which is an opportunity maybe to get around like-minded people, you know, an atmosphere where he's well-received and lauded in his home country. He turned down the Olympics. He's out, you know, enjoying his offseason. And to his words, working on his game individually, we see him buying houses and enjoying Wimbledon, as we talked about in the past. I don't even know if what's scratching the surface with him, but I think that the Sixers are in a weird position because if all this happens and then he comes to training camp, it doesn't work out, he ends up at training camp in September. To me, all the momentum is moving toward him not being here. And you know, there's different schools of thought on that about whether the Sixers are making a huge mistake or if this is the right move. But if they're open to trade talks, you know, we remember what happened with the James Harden speculation, how we thought that might have affected his psyche. All this Sham Sharania report, Mark Stein stuff, you know, Maury saying specifically that whoever is on the roster, if they are available to move in a trade to improve the team, he's going to try to pursue it and go after it. It's almost like he can't come back if all this continues to build. And, you know, the draft is coming up here in a couple of weeks. Are you feeling the same thing? Do you feel like it's getting to a point where, like, all the cards are on the table and the chips are pushed to the center and like, either it's fish or cut bait type of time?
I don't think we're quite there yet. Mm-hmm. I do think, though, obviously being included in those James Harden discussions was something that was impactful for him. And, you know, he said after, it was kind of a relief to still be in Philly, and he was happy that that was the case. He did play very well heading into the All-Star break, finished the first half of the season extremely strong and kind of made a final push to show that he deserved to be an All-Star. So I don't think it's necessarily something where just because he's the hot name in the NBA trade market and the Sixers are shopping him that there will have been irreparable damage done and it's impossible for him to have a future in Philadelphia. But I do think momentum is building to the notion of him starting next season elsewhere. But ultimately, a lot of this is in Daryl Morey's hands. And just because a lot of fans want Simmons to be elsewhere, and just because everyone is fascinated about what team he might end up on, he's not obligated to do anything if it doesn't make sense. And as you said, the reporting is the Sixers want an all-star caliber player. Obviously, they'll want someone who fits nicely with Joel Embiid and who can help the Sixers championship odds in the near term. The hope would be that that's out there. But if it's not, you know, this isn't mandatory to trade Ben Simmons.
In all of this, we have the Sixers president and GM buying a Ben Simmons NBA Top Shot moment for like over $4,000. Like, what, like, make sense of that for me. Like, I kind of got swept under the rug. I don't know if everyone is aware of what happened with that, but it was an NBA Top Shot Ben Simmons NFT against the Utah Jazz, and the Sixers president of basketball operations, it seems like a conflict of interest in a way. What did you think of that, Noah?
Definitely curious. Yeah, there are a few different ways you can read it. Maybe part of it is just trying to emphasize the message that Ben Simmons is valuable. You know, literally, I'm willing to pay thousands of dollars for this NFT. But
wow. So you're saying, like, maybe one angle is that he's like kind of like pushing the market in a way to, like, his trade value, I mean, is like going up because Daryl's buying NFTs.
I think one can read it that way. I'm skeptical, though, that something along those lines would actually have any sort of effect on substantive trade talks. But look, Daryl Morey is a guy with some interesting, diverse interests. He's extremely online, as anyone who follows him on Twitter knows, and he's not the traditional leader of a basketball team's, you know, president, leader of a basketball team's operations. So, yeah, I don't know entirely what to make of it. I think that's one way that it could be read, but as far as it being something that actually indicates he is going to do X, Y, or Z with Ben Simmons, I think that's very unlikely.
Right. It's just so odd. You know, odd, maybe not the right word, but like he's pushing the public perception of Ben in a way at a time when he's like, his image is like falling. It's just a weird, you know, juxtaposition of things. Just something we definitely have not seen before, considering the cryptocurrency and crypto markets and all that stuff, if those of you out there who are interested in that. But thought I'd mention that. But let's dig a little deeper and get into specifics here with Mark Stein and his report. And I'll give you that right here, because there were several teams and some maybe haven't considered before. And on top of that, players whose names have come up in as being available who we hadn't heard of before, like Colin Sexton. But Mark Stein Tuesday naming the Cavs, Pacers, Timberwolves, and Kings as known suitors. So that's one category. And then he also wrote that the Raptors have said to have expressed interest in Simmons. So let's start with the Cavaliers, because Colin Sexton has been a name that has been put on the market as a player who might be available because Cleveland doesn't want to extend him from his rookie deal. I think he has 1 year left on his rookie deal and then will be due for an extension, or is due for an extension now, so to speak. But any interest in anything the Cavs have that the Sixers could, obviously Darius Garland, they traded for Jared Allen. Any players on that team you think the Sixers would be smart to pursue if they absolutely had to trade them?
Yeah, I think Sexton and Darius Garland are two of the obvious names. Garland's getting some good experience now with that.
Now, wait, are you saying you would want both of them or one or the other?
I mean, I'm sure the Sixers would love both. I think overall, Cleveland, it seems unlikely on paper that they'd offer the best package for Ben Simmons. I think, in my opinion, with some of these young teams that understandably have interest in a 24-year-old three-time All-Star, such as the Cavs and then also the Timberwolves, it seems improbable that the Sixers would want to do a two-team deal. It seems like some sort of multi-team configuration is probably what makes the most sense, because you think about Cleveland, you know, Colin Sexton and high first-round draft pick. I'm not sure that that's super appealing for the Sixers, but maybe if you fold some other teams into the mix and one of those teams has an all-star caliber player who's proven he is that level already, then you're starting to make a little bit more sense. So that's kind of my overarching thought on some of these teams that are young, rebuilding, and see Ben Simmons as a potential part of their future. Because it just seems to me like the Sixers don't want to have to bank on a player's potential, right? So you're doing that to the utmost if you're taking, you know, a high pick in the draft and using that pick. But you're also doing it to a certain extent with a young player like a Sexton or Garland, who hasn't shown yet that he can be a valuable contributor on a winning team. You know, he's been impressive and done some good things for a team, you know, that's not playing postseason basketball.
So just stepping away from the Cavs for a moment, it seems like a player like Malcolm Brogdon might fit the mold of who you're talking about. A Pacers of being a team who are also interested in Ben Simmons. So, I mean, when we're looking at these names like Timberwolves, Kings, like these aren't like playoff caliber proven teams who have like young stars who have shown that they can do it at the highest level necessarily. Maybe definitely the Raptors may have people who fit that mold. But are you turned off by the King, by the Cavalier? Like are all of these teams, to just get it out the way, do you feel like there needs to be another team in order to precipitate the Simmons trade like the Cavs would, like that you just said?
Yeah, I think most likely I probably feel that way the strongest with Minnesota, especially if I think, as multiple reports have indicated, they're not willing to part with, you know, number one pick Anthony Edwards. And I just don't think D'Angelo Russell for Ben Simmons, that sort of swap, is good enough for the Sixers. So yeah, definitely with Minnesota, I think probably most likely with Cleveland. Sacramento, I think De'Aaron Fox, though young, is probably the closest to that general description I was trying to hint at of an all-star-ish player.
Right. Can take over a game, show dominance, impose their will on the outcome.
Yeah, and it's not difficult to imagine him pairing well with Joel Embiid as a guy who can create a shot, who puts up threes.
Sixers fans fall in love with him because he's full bore the whole 48 minutes.
And he's one of the few players in the NBA who was, you know, arguably as fast as Ben Simmons. So that would continue to be a lot of fun and someone who could push the pace and lead the transition offense, but at least on paper, perhaps fits a little bit better with Embiid in the half court offense. And certainly there's no issues with teams sagging off him, daring him to shoot, et cetera, which is obviously the area of greatest weakness for Simmons outside of the foul shooting. So yeah, the Kings, of course, the Sixers would love Fox. They'd presumably like Tyrese Halliburton, who's coming off a really strong rookie season. And then you're kind of down a tier of players where you're looking at Buddy Hield and Marvin Bagley and draft picks and those types of assets, if you will. So that's probably what a deal with the Kings would look like. But Sacramento, at least in my mind, compared to Cleveland or Minnesota, the probability of just a two-team deal is a bit higher.
Yeah, man, Sixers fans would love De'Aaron Fox for the reasons I mentioned. Buddy Hield, long been a guy that has been speculated to be on the trade market or could be acquired, and Sixers fans have already used some mental time to like process what he would look like with this team. So interesting, because it was always the thought process was always Hield would be here with Simmons. So Hield here without Simmons is an entirely different thought process. I think, you know, you make some excellent points, and I see exactly what you're saying. There was the speculation that, or we had heard that Malcolm Brogdon and a draft pick was offered for Simmons, which the Sixers weren't interested in. There were thoughts that Brogdon and TJ Warren could be a package as well. I would love to have Anthony Edwards personally, because you see the desire and want to for him to be, want to be upper echelon and him want to be one of the best of his class or in the league, period. I feel like he was a bit robbed in that rookie of the year voting. But I think the Raptors name being in the mix with the way Kyle Lowry, his name was floated through, you know, the Delaware Valley of possibly landing here at home and what he could do for the 76ers and whether or not they wanted to pay the price to acquire him. What would the Raptors be given? Is that all we're looking at? Is Kyle Lowry, you think? I mean, obviously they are doing an impeccable job of acquiring and developing talent. So theoretically, that could be a place where they could develop Ben Simmons and see all the upside that he could bring if his jump shot came along. Are you looking at a lot more than Kyle Lowry in a trade with the Raptors if that was to go down, Noah?
I wouldn't imagine so, no. I mean, it's definitely interesting to consider. As with a lot of this, like you said, I think we've thought for a long time about how could this player, that player fit along Ben Simmons? You know, we thought about Lowry as a guy who'd be sharing ball handling duties with him or a guy that'd be running pick and rolls with him. And something where they're changing teams could be awfully interesting. Lowry, of course, you know, a pending free agent, has long been rumored to have interest in going to Miami. And I imagine with Kyle Lowry, his desires will play a very large role in what Toronto wants to do. But you'd imagine, especially given that they didn't pull the trigger at the trade deadline as many expected, that they will be heavily exploring, you know, what could be on the table in a sign and trade. And maybe that's a sign and trade with the Sixers.
And I think there's a couple dilemmas here. One of them being when you're trying to get the proper return, Ben Simmons' resume is prolific, man. Like, it doesn't really stack up really well if you're trying to compare apples to apples. Like, this guy's defensive player of the year, runner up, you know, third team all NBA, three-time all, like the, you, it's hard to match up the, you know, he's 24 years old. Like, you got guys who might fit the mold, but, you know, Malcolm Brogdon's 31 and Kyle Lowry's in his mid-30s. You know what I mean? It's just like when you're trying to – so De'Aaron Fox is definitely on the younger side and could fit that mold, but he also doesn't have the quote-unquote credentials of NBA success that Ben has, so it's not quite the same. You know what I'm saying? So do you think that that's kind of a big obstacle for the Sixers of matching up, you know, youth contract and – you know, the caliber of player? Like, it seems like it's going to take some finesse to actually find the right formula. Like you said, it may require a third team. It may require a dark horse squad that we're not even thinking about, you know, the Spurs maybe being one of them. But it seems like it's a real fine line that they're trying to navigate here, and probably why it behooves the Sixers in some aspects to try to hang on to Ben and make it work.
I'm not sure I'd go quite that far, but I agree. Not that I think it's a bad idea to hold on to him if the trade market dictates it, but I agree with everything before. I think this is a lot more difficult than probably the average observer realizes, and these executives making these calls have really, really difficult decisions on their hands. I think that's ultimately the bottom line. I think for a long time, you know, again, the way we've thought about this in the past has kind of shifted in the context of Ben Simmons having this abysmal postseason with the free throw shooting. But then the question is just how much should it shift? So I think for a very long time, we thought of Ben Simmons as someone who might be traded for Zach LaVine or Bradley Beal. Or, of course, you know, Damian Lillard has been a hot name this offseason. Maybe some of those sorts of trades are still on the table, but it's just something where the Sixers would have to give up a little more in addition to Ben Simmons. But something like that would seem to, you know, at least have a shot at meeting the Sixers' criteria. Zach LaVine, Bradley Beal, no doubt they're all-star caliber players. Like, they're literally all-stars. You know, you're not having to do any stretching there. And that's something where you'd imagine Daryl Morey would feel a lot better about, because there's no doubt that this player, you know, can help the Sixers in the short term.
Glad you brought up the Portland Trailblazers, because for those that listen to the podcast regularly, NBC Sports Northwest Trailblazers insider Dwight James was on the podcast a couple of episodes ago, and he brought up the point of Damian Lillard's lack of defense being where Ben Simmons could come into the fold and kind of fill a void that team has. And, you know, if you've been watching Team USA, Lillard defensively, just something I've focused more on, you know, you don't see a whole lot of Trailblazers games nationally. Obviously, they have their handful, and you see them a lot in the playoffs, but, you know, Dame's defense has not been something I've ever focused on, and just seeing just him in isolation. I mean, he's not a huge guy and with a giant wingspan, so that definitely, you know, changes his versatility a bit. But I just think it's interesting when you're thinking about players and who could fit and what might work out. I see his point more about Dame's lack of defense and Ben fitting in alongside that. But it seems like we're making progress here as the draft is upon us and free agency comes up in August, but the Simmons thing is still something that still has some time to take shape. It may be like an 11th hour thing, no?
It could be. I think, especially in light of what we've talked about, where you have these young rebuilding teams with interest, it would behoove them to get something done before the draft or on draft night if a top five, top five.
Yeah, so they can pivot off of whatever that might be to make their selection.
Yeah. I mean, you know, to trade a pick in this year's draft, you know, we only have a little over 2 weeks to.
Gotcha. Yeah.
But who knows? This is something that could linger. And especially if the Sixers are one of many teams who logically would want to wait and kind of secretly, not so secretly, hope that the Damian Lillard situation goes south in Portland, then that's where this might last for quite a while.
Buckle up, Sixers fans. We're in the end game now, to quote Dr. Strange.
Start college, build skills, and complete your degree with Wilmington University. 100% online options and affordable tuition make WilmU work for you. Learn more at wilmu.edu.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Sixers pick 28th in the upcoming NBA draft. What kind of value can they get there? You know, they might not even make that 28th selection. That pick could be the trade kicker or trade incentive, along with the Simmons deal, where they maybe move up in the draft, or who knows how this will all play out. I'm sure Daryl Morey is busy along with his staff trying to figure out what is best for this organization. And I think, Noah, either way, whether they make the pick at 28, move up, move down, whoever they acquire, they make a trade or what have you, shooters and guys who can get to the cup off the dribble still are at a premium for this team. You know, I know Doc Rivers doesn't value – you know, rookie contribution to his roster in a high regard. We saw, you know, Tyrese Maxey get intermittent minutes. Some games he didn't play when we thought he might play. Some games he played more than we thought because of situational things. But Doc has shown that he's not going to lean on rookies to make the difference with his roster. So what, whoever they pick and how they fit into the team and what kind of playing time they get is remains to be seen. At 28, are there names that are really piquing your interest as far as how they might fit with this team and really, you know, really could make an impact with the Sixers?
There are, yeah. I've got five for you here. I agree. Yeah, I agree with how you laid that out. I think Vince Rosman, the team's VP of scouting, someone who deserves a lot of credit because they've crushed these last few drafts with the
absolutely yes
notable you know regrettable decision of the Mikal Bridges Zaire Smith trade. Pretty much every other decision they've made has been excellent, and you look at the late 20s specifically, you have three strong picks there in Tyrese Maxey, Matisse Thybulle, and Landry Shamet just in the last 4 years. So who knows if they can kind of keep that streak up, but I do think there's reason for optimism to think that they can snag a rotation player here. Yeah, the four or five guys I've got here, Trey Mann from Florida, shifty, creative player, has some real flair to his game, improved a lot from year one to year two, shot over 40% from three, and I think one of the most appealing qualities there is he looks like a legit shot creator, someone you can clear the floor out for, and he's going to find a way to get you a bucket. Always something the Sixers are looking for. Jeremiah Robinson Earl, of course, a name that will be familiar to many Philly basketball fans. Villanova product, co-Big East player of the year. I think the hopeful projection for him is that he's a versatile, valuable kind of glue guy role player at the NBA level. And I think his defense is impressive, both on the perimeter and the interior, and he has some of those tools that perhaps he helps the Sixers a little bit in the front court, which is an area they need to get better in. He said maybe that doesn't happen right away. He is still, you know, only 20 years old. Doc Rivers doesn't tend to trust rookies a ton, but this is a smart player who excelled under Jay Wright. And the idea of taking a Villanova kid, you know, you don't want that to be the only reason you would draft him, but Jay Wright and that program have a very, you know, impressive track record of producing good NBA role players in my
Worth noting that Sham Sharania reported yesterday that Robinson Earl is still turning heads and could be a lottery pick. New Orleans Pelicans specifically mentioned as a team that was showing interest in him. He might not even be around at 28, but an excellent, Elton Brand's mantra of drafting much more mature players, if that is still their marching orders. I don't know if, you know, picking Tyrese Maxey doesn't fit that mold, but Matisse Thybulle does. But Robinson Earl, a lot of college experience that he could lend to the Sixers team as far as being in those tough clutch moments and playing in big games.
Yeah, I think there's no mandate from the Sixers front office of we need to take someone who's not a one-and-done player or has played X number of college games, but at least in their recent history, they have selected players who are poised and they just understand how to play the game and they have a lot of self-belief, and Robinson Earl, I think, would check those boxes in addition to having some of that appealing versatility that the team might be looking for. And then a few guards. Miles Deuce McBride from West Virginia, really tough, tenacious on-ball defender, shot 41% from three as a sophomore. Think he's a name to consider. The defense reminds me a little of the prior West Virginia kind of smaller guard, Javon Carter. But I think maybe there's a little more offensive upside, a little more shot creation ability, and some good, you know, three-point shooting his sophomore year. So I think he's a name for the Sixers to have on their mind. And then Jared Butler, the Final Four MOP, won the national title this year for Baylor. Unfortunately for him, he was referred to the NBA's, like, fitness to play panel because of health issues. So that's a very kind of murky deal. And, you know, hopefully that all pans out okay for him and he's deemed healthy to play in the league. But if he is, I think he's a real shifty, impressive ball handler, kind of understands how to run a team, and not difficult to imagine him slotting in as a guy who can play backup point guard minutes for the Sixers in addition to shooting well off the catch and off the dribble. And then finally, Trey Murphy III from UVA, 50-40-90 season, some good length, ability to guard the wing position well, and then also some stretch four potential, which again, given the Sixers' weaknesses this season and that Mike Scott spot, maybe Trey Murphy is a guy that would make sense for them.
Yeah, the Sixers are considered one of these, you know, high-end, you know, back-of-the-draft playoff teams, and you're trying to grab someone who possibly slipped in the draft, like Tyrese Maxey, or the value isn't perceived as much as it should be, possibly like a Landry Shamet or Matisse Thybulle. So those are great examples from you, Noah. And we continue to have to, you know, think that Daryl Morey's playing ball a bit with people out there, and that 28 pick probably be included in maybe a possible Simmons trade, and maybe the Sixers drafted earlier in the draft. So definitely something to keep a watch out for here as these next couple of weeks develop. Be sure to check out NBCSportsPhiladelphia.com for all of Noah's latest articles and details on the draft and the Ben Simmons trades.
Yeah, and just a quick note, obviously they don't just have pick 28, they've got 50. You know, Shake Milton was a pick in the 50s, so who knows, you know, there's always a shot. If you got a draft pick, maybe you land a gem, you land someone who might be part of your rotation, so that's on the table as well.
Start college, build skills, and complete your degree with Wilmington University. 100% online options and affordable tuition make WilmU work for you. Learn more at wilmu.edu.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Man, the Sixers have a few unrestricted free agents. You know, all of this is going to take shape over these next few weeks with the draft and then free agency quickly thereafter, training camps in September. So each of these months, July, August, and September, and even October with the season beginning, are extremely vital. The Olympics here in an off year playing a great, you know, buffer, to bridge the gap between high caliber basketball and all this NBA offseason stuff. So basketball fans should be feeling pretty good about themselves, and hopefully Sixers fans, things have healed and you can enjoy hoops. The final is still going on, a lot of hoops to enjoy here at the moment. The Sixers have four unrestricted free agents, you know, Dwight Howard, Danny Green, probably prime among them. Noah, do you feel like any of those unrestricted free agents might be coming back, or will the Sixers be better off trying to bring in some fresh bodies and fresh eyes with the team here and from maybe signing some veteran minimum guys that fill those voids?
Yeah, you definitely expect them to utilize veteran minimum deals and the taxpayer mid-level exception, which was something that Daryl Morey opted against last offseason. As far as their UFAs, I think we could safely say it would be a surprise if Mike Scott returned. I could see it going either way with the other three, Furkan Korkmaz and then Green and Howard, as you mentioned. I think Danny Green, it would make a lot of sense in many ways to bring him back. They have early bird rights on him. So as far as being able to pay him enough, that's not going to be an issue. It's just a question of whether they think it's worth, you know, it's worth it to do so. And then how they think, you know, he might fit here. And then, of course, a lot's on just Green's play, whether another team is more attractive to him or he thinks another team might have a better shot at a title that is offering comparable money or even a little bit of less money. Of course, Danny Green was in the spotlight recently with his comments on John Clark's podcast about Sixers fans booing. I would personally be surprised if that has a huge impact either way. I think things will simmer down a little and he'll make the choice that's best for him in free agency. But yeah, he was a part of a very strong starting lineup this season. And I think the Sixers recognize the on-court value as well as the intangible value as a veteran leader and someone who has been there and done that in terms of winning NBA titles. Dwight Howard, I think it's obvious they can't rely on him as their only backup center. If he's back, there needs to be one or two other guys who are capable of backing up Joel Embiid because you just can't count on Dwight Howard to be the guy in every matchup. And then Furkan Korkmaz is super interesting. They have his bird rights. You'd imagine there might be some teams out there who find him attractive as a young player who has been good enough to play postseason minutes and is a shooter, kind of microwave scorer, sort of prototype off the bench. And then it's just a question of what the Sixers are willing to offer. Furkan has said that he considers Philadelphia home and he'd like to be back here, but of course he's going to weigh his options. So I think it would probably not make a ton of sense necessarily to bring back both Korkmaz and Green. It might be a one or the other sort of deal, but with those three guys, I think a lot of options are on the table for sure.
Yeah, interesting that Danny Green and Furkan, you tie them together like that because they have some similarities. Obviously, Danny Green's defense is better. Furkan has made tremendous strides in that category. Interesting. I really feel like Furkan's value is definitely on the rise because of his age, and he's developing into a role that I think other teams can see themselves utilizing. So the Sixers might be in a situation where they, you know, possibly don't want to spend as much as the value that Furkan might command. I'm curious to see how the market develops for him. Danny Green, I'm hit or miss with Danny Green. I really liked his contribution. I thought he gave a lot to the team. And he was a part of that prolific starting five that the Sixers had with that terrific win percentage, tops in the league. But he's a year older, and you know, you to expect him to bring that high caliber level of shooting and defense again, particularly considering he finished the season on the injured list, and you know, your body doesn't hold up forever. So maybe a year too parting ways a year too soon on Danny Green might be better than waiting a year too late, so to speak. But I think that the veterans that you listed in your article, NBCSportsPhiladelphia.com, that the Sixers could potentially acquire are interesting. If you had to pick three of those names that were in that list, a couple of guys, Langston Galloway, Torrey Craig, who are still in the mix right now, playing in the finals. Is there anybody on that you feel like would be the optimal names for the Sixers to consider if those opportunities became available? Because who knew that we would miss Tony Bradley in the playoffs? Who knew that late in the season, Tony Bradley's absence would come back to be a thing the Sixers maybe lamented or didn't, that role wasn't available to them. But just an example of that diamond in the rough kind of guy who makes a tremendous contribution to what you have, but, you know, is really a low cost, low risk type of investment. So not necessarily a Tony Bradley type of guy, but are there three names that you can winnow down as I put you on the hot seat here that you feel like stand out to you?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think Craig is like the quintessential example of what you're saying. Like, teams that are in the NBA finals, they just tend to have those types of players. I did include Craig on this list, but I won't include him among my three names because I figure he's shown he's worth more than a minimum deal with him playing, you know, every game for an NBA finals team. And
worth mentioning, he's one of those really cool situations where he will get a ring no matter who wins the NBA championship, the Bucks or the Suns, because he spent so much time on the Bucks before being on the Suns that he qualifies to get a championship ring either way. So
yeah, he's a winner, Torrey Craig. Yeah, the names I'll give you, if we're talking about like the Tony Bradley role, Gorgui Dieng, who the Spurs signed in the buyout market, who began the year on Memphis. Mark Stein had reported that the Sixers were among the teams that pursued him, so it's a logical guy to consider for the Sixers now that it's the off season. He's a, you know, an NBA backup center, right? You know, he's not someone who would widely be considered above average, but probably he could back up Joel Embiid at a capable level. Importantly, he's willing to shoot threes and is at least somewhat of a threat as a pick and pop player. And, you know, I think he's for a veteran minimum contract, has the potential to be a decent value signing for the Sixers or for some other contending team. Another guy I'll throw out there in part because I'm sure Sixers fans would find it at least somewhat exciting is Wayne Ellington, former Episcopal Academy star. Obviously, he's not in his prime anymore, but he still shoots very well.
True journeyman.
Yeah, he still draws a ton of attention from opposing defenses, a la J.J. Redick. And you could imagine something there where him and Embiid can develop a little two-man chemistry with that dribble handoff game. And like with Danny Green, he's someone who, based upon what you hear about him and his personality, could be a positive presence in a locker room as a veteran who, you know, is a pro's pro and helps some of the young guys with their development. I think he's an interesting name. And then for the final guy, I'll go with Sterling Brown from the Rockets. Was a member of the Bucks rotation at one stage and then moved to Houston, who, you know, obviously was a rebuilding team, only won 17 games, but he shot the three ball this year at a career best 42%. You do wonder whether that's sustainable or whether it was just a one-year sort of aberration. But he's someone that can guard multiple positions well, is a physical defender, and has been a role player on a good team before, and is still in his mid-20s and theoretically has a little room to improve. And maybe he has like another little leap that he takes with the Sixers. Unfortunately, he had a very scary incident in Miami where he was assaulted outside of a club and suffered facial lacerations. But, by all accounts, he should be good to go for next season and kind of put that little scary chapter behind him. And he's a player that I think might kind of fulfill that diamond in the rough criteria should the Sixers get him with a minimum deal. But it's tough, you know, with minimum guys, there's a lot of names that you can throw out there because below the class of stars in the NBA, there are a lot of these sorts of guys who are the eighth or ninth or 10th man on a bench. And it's all about finding the right ones, and the Sixers will hope to do that this offseason.
Sterling Brown, man, the Milwaukee incident and then the incident in Miami, like my boy just needs some level ground and just like some peace for a little while. But here, my question to you though is, if the money was close, if you could figure out a way to make it, you know, amenable for the Sixers, would you value Furkan Korkmaz over any of those guys, or would you think he just fits in and is similar to what they could be?
I think probably, yeah. I think it would be surprising if Korkmaz only gets a minimum contract.
Right.
I think, as you said, he boosted his stock a little bit this postseason, even though he...
Well, let's say the minimum is like $5 million. If you sign him to like a three-year, $15 million deal, would you be amenable to that? Would you like that more than you would like maybe a one-year deal with one of these other guys?
Well, I don't think it's an either-or thing. Even Dwight Howard, who, you know, has played in the league for a very long time, his minimum contract was 2-point-something million.
Right.
There is a significant difference between these minimum.
I guess I was thinking more mid-level exception, like the,
Korkmaz, I think that might be the sort of money that he is earning in free agencies, something at or a little below the mid-level. 3 years, $15 million for Korkmaz. I think that's most likely right about the appropriate range for him. So that would be intriguing, yeah. But worth keeping in mind with these minimum guys, like every team has the ability to sign players to the minimum. And really the only limitation there is just your roster spots. So the Sixers only had the one minimum signing in Dwight Howard, but should there be open roster spots in a situation where Ben Simmons and young players are traded for a star, then they could be filling out their roster with 4 or 5 minimum signings potentially.
Right. And there's, you know, you're holding out hope that one of these guys is the difference or turning the tide and you advancing to the championship or moving past that. But hey, we'll keep an eye out and give you all the details, the ins and outs of everything as these weeks and months develop. Be sure to keep it locked on NBC Sports Philadelphia, NBCSportsPhiladelphia.com for all of the developments. Follow Noah on social media, as me as well, and Ben Berry. So we will see you next time here on the Sixers Talk podcast. Brought to you by Wilmington University, WilmU Works. For Noah Levick and Ben Berry, I'm Danny Pommel. See you next time.